Hi everybody. I quite like to Friday night and we're going to have a talk about Succession Guru Yoga. I'd also like to welcome all of you online. So we'll begin as we normally do. We'll start with a few prayers and then we'll actually be giving commentary, I suppose, or a tutorial. So please just get comfortable in your seat. You'd like ideally have your back straight, shoulders relaxed. Try to make sure your head is sort of evenly balanced on your neck and have your eyes focused downwards. You can close your eyes completely, leave them slightly open so a bit of light comes in, or just leave the eyes natural, whatever suits you. Now just let your body breathe itself. So bring to mind your intention for engaging in this class tonight. So, in brief, you understand that you are very fortunate to still be alive tonight and have the opportunity to make the most of your leisures and opportunities. We all understand that samsara is not a fulfilling experience. We wish to transcend it. And we want to do this not just for ourselves, but for the benefit of all beings. It's a way of repaying the kindness of all sentient beings. Think that you wish to become fully awakened. And you will become fully awakened by relying upon the three rare precious jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So, join me in taking refuge. So, join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Then to recollect the mind of enlightenment, we also use four boundless thoughts together. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Then to purify the mind and to collect merit, we'll recite the seven-limb prayer. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So, to prevent clinging to the merit we've accumulated and the purification we've undergone, I think that everything resolves into emptiness, then reappears as a pure land. And we're going to offer this pure land to the Buddha and his entourage. So join me in saying, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field of offering. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So I think that the offering has been sent off and it's been accepted by the Buddhas and he smiles at us with delight. So we're going to look at this practice called Succession Guru Yoga. It's got sort of, this presentation's got three parts. First, we're going to look at the preliminaries, then the actual practice of the Guru Yoga. And then I've prepared something called repairing non-engagement. How to prepare the material for this evening. I've primarily relied upon these three texts. As you can see, one called Succession Guru Yoga by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. We have, you can buy this from FPMT. The book here also called Succession Guru Yoga. And there's another Succession Guru Yoga commentary, mainly by Bhante Rinpoche. It also comes from the FPMT. These two you can buy online. So I wasn't able to find very much actual written material. These are the three things I can only come up with. However, there are a number of commentaries that you might be able to have access to. There is a study site called Study Buddhism by Alexander Berzin. This has got a tremendous commentary on this practice, Succession Guru Yoga. There's also a commentary by Khenpo Rinpoche, Geshe Thachsen Tsering. I think it was in 2011. He gave a few things on that. You might be able to get that through applying to Chen Yuzhak Institute, but there are also students who might have these teachings. They might share them with you. There's also a long succession commentary by a lama called Gelug Rinpoche from Jewel Heart Publications. You can also get that online. Costs you about maybe $12, I think. There's also a short succession commentary by Gelug Rinpoche, also online, you can pay for and download. Also, there's a free commentary called A Drop from the Vast Ocean of Vows, Precepts, and Samayas. This is a succession commentary by Khenpo Jumpa Tegchok. It's pretty amazing, but it's sort of incomplete. But it is there, and it's from they're called the Happy Monks publication. So there's a lot of material by these guys. It's really good. Now, there are a number of benefits for doing this practice. So I just want to mention three of the major ones, and then I'll put the slide up and you'll see a number of minor ones. So one of the major benefits of reciting this and practicing it is that you maintain the integrity of all the vows and you prevent downfalls. So the Succession Guru Yoga was specifically designed to be a comprehensive daily review of all commitments. And by reciting it six times a day, we can systematically recall and reaffirm the vows. Secondly, we can systematically renew the commitments of the five Buddha families. And lastly, we also establish perfect morality as the basis for higher realizations. But in the Vajrayana, morality is defined by keeping one's commitments. And this is a succession. Guru Yoga is the primary tool for maintaining this awareness and discipline. Now, here are five other benefits that accrue when you engage in the practice. So, it does provide a swift and certain path to Buddhahood. Secondly, you swiftly gather blessings and remove obstacles. Thirdly, it really deepens and stabilizes bodhicitta. Fourthly, you reinforce the foundation of refuge and you maintain mindfulness of the view of emptiness. So these benefits are all within this practice. So now the way I'm going to do this, I'm going to open up with a slide like this, which you will probably all have in your own Succession Guru Yoga in the long version. So you see, I've called it A1, it's about refuge and bodhicitta. I'll talk a little about this, and then we bring in like the next slide, like this one, where it'll have these different precepts, and then we just go back to the next verse. Now, if there are people online who have had commentaries on this and know material that I don't know or I don't cover, please write it in for you, Madonna. Would that be okay? And Madonna will let me know, and then I can share it with everybody else. Because there will be. I'm sure that I don't say or I don't know. Perhaps you can know. It would be good to share it amongst all of us as Vajra brothers and sisters. So this first verse, refuge in bodhicitta. So the idea between this, in Guru Yoga, we see our own mind as being inseparable from the guru's awakened mind. So the Buddha is our innate clarity. The Dharma, its unceasing expression, and the Sangha, its compassionate energy. So here, although we say we're taking refuge, actually we're becoming the refuge. But you know, you have refuge in terms of causal refuge and resultant refuge. So causal refuge, we're relying upon the external phenomenon to become awakened. And then there's the result. We are that refuge. You'll see in the Sixth Session Guru Yoga, the first section is causal and then it's resultant. We become the object of refuge. So in other words, the sort of the ultimate protection for ourselves is not found in the source outside us, but is realized as the mind's nature, our own mind's nature. Now, when it comes to the visualization, it is not necessary to visualize the refuge field. But what's most important is to generate the two causes of going for refuge. However, if you do the visualization, there are a number of ways that you can do it. And these ways are what you have on those handouts. That's on your, one of the handouts you've got is a slide with all the different textual sources, and you can go and find them there. Now, I'm just going to tell you, like, the simplest way is if you just have the one figure of Shakyamuni Buddha. That's a refuge object. There are other ways where they have like five thrones. You've got, and what there's one big throne, then there's five thrones on that, and then you've got all the gurus and the bodhisattvas around them all. It's really massive. And I would suggest that's quite difficult for us. If you want to do this well, like I said, just have the Buddha there. You don't have to see him, but you need to think that he's there. And that I'm going for refuge because I'm actually afraid of what the future may bring me. But I have confidence in that I can avoid those difficult outcomes of a bad future. Well, we'll see. We'll come to this. First, we do the refuge, but we'll go through, and then we'll come to the merit field, and I'll talk to you about the merit field then. Okay? But just remember the refuge field, Shakyamuni Buddha. They are sort of a fear or a reasonable anxiety about what's going to happen to you at the time of death. Then confidence that by relying upon this practice, those bad outcomes are not going to happen. So when we look back at that verse, you can see, what does it say? It goes, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. So when we do that, this is one of the precepts of refuge. So you know, we took refuge together, the precepts. So one of us, we have to take refuge three times a day. You take refuge three times a day. And here, it's three times in the morning and three times at night, because you do the practice twice. So just doing that verse and saying it, you cover this precept of refuge, but you also cover the three pledges of Arachana, which are to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So in this practice, we've got a I think it's in 19 pledges to the five Dhyani Buddhas. So three of them are covered straight away, but it's by going, I go for refuge to the three jewels. I go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Verse 2. This is the four immeasurables. Here again, there's no need to visualize, but you can do if you want to. And the way of doing this is just like, you know, you can say it like this, may all seem to be parted from aversion and clinging, feeling close to some or distant from others. Or you can take the longer version. Remember, this has got four immeasurables, and each immeasurable has got quite a lot to say about it. You can do it that way, or just do it like this. Now, if you're going to visualize, you can do it. For each immeasurable, there's a slightly different visualization. So, in equanimity, you can radiate a gentle white light that dissolves the sufferings of all beings, attachment, and aversion. When it comes to love and kindness, you can radiate a warm golden light, bestowing upon every being true happiness and all its causes. For compassion, you radiate a brilliant healing light. And finally, for the joy, you are a sparkling diamond-like light. Now, for each of these types of light, you can also, so instead of just reciting the four immeasurables, you can do giving and taking or Tong Len at this time. And that's why you can use these different color lights. The four immeasurables, there are two pledges of Ratnasambhava. These are the generosity of giving protection from fear, that's covered by that line of equanimity, and the generosity of giving love and kindness. Okay, verse 3, the generation of the wishing mind. We need to do this. We have to generate bodhicitta in six sessions, day and night. We have to recollect this. So this is the pledge we cover when we recite that verse. There's no visualization other than you still understand that the Buddha is right there. And so you might not see him, but you have to feel this is all done in the presence of Buddha Shakyamuni. And once you say this, of course, so from this moment on, until I am a Buddha, may I never give up on my life at stake, this wishing bodhicitta. When you say it, you've got to sort of imagine Buddha's looking at you and his gaze is very warm. He's very happy that you're pledging your life in this way, that you've taken up this wish. So when you do this, it should be like a sense of joy arising in you. Because in one way, like you've made this, you know, this is a way of making your life really meaningful. Then it comes to the engaging mind, and this is the vow. Now, with this engaging mind, again, we generate it three times. We recite it three times twice, right? So it's six times. And we are, when we recite it, we have to imagine that the Buddha is saying this vow first. So I'll go back here. So the Buddha says this, and you say it straight after him. If you don't do it, you haven't taken the vow. So don't just say it. It's got to be, okay, I'm hearing the Buddha say this, and now I say it. I always found this quite tricky when Kinsa Rinpoche explained this. I was like, whoa, this, it's so much easier, like you're saying, to just say it, right? But it's actually you're meant to repeat it because he's giving you the vow. Right? So the vow's got to be given and you've got to take it. So that means you want to imagine that Buddha's actually saying this to you and then now you say it.
Actually visualize Buddha saying it,
yep,
and then we're repeating.
That's right. Oh. That's right. So we're imagining the Buddha is saying it, and then we're repeating it after him. So you might go like, you might pause like you go, say, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and Gurus, please listen. And you wait to what I now say from the depths of my heart. Just as all the Buddhas will pass, blah, blah, blah. So you've got to try and don't just race through it because you're trying to, it's like I'm saying it and then you're going to follow along with me.
Okay? So Rosemary's, yes, it is explained. She just wanted to clarify with line by line, and you are doing line by line.
Yeah, so it's just make sure you just sort of pause so it's like you can actually imagine, I've got to wait for Buddha to say it. He's saying it now, I'm saying it.
Sorry, Eddie. Delma asks, can you imagine your guru is saying it and recite it three times thinking that?
What's different about that than what I've seen? So if you do it like this line by line, you have to sort of like slow down a bit. If you find that this is like too difficult for you, then at least wait a minute, so okay, then my lama, who's appearing as Buddha Shakyamuni, he's going to say this to me, and then I'm going to repeat it after him. But yeah, sort of when we did the initiations, and then the lama says they say now repeat after me. And they do a line, then we do the line. Then they do a line, then we do a line. It's like that. So here's the visualization that goes with it. So you're sort of, you're at the center of this assembly of refuge beings, or the Buddha, you're in front of them. You should think that you've got all the male sentient beings on the right and all the female sentient beings on the left. You're completely surrounded by all sentient beings. And then you repeat the vow after the Lama. Now, when you recite it on the third repetition, you don't think, now I have the vow. Because we recite it three times. And not only do you have this vow, you have this, the bodhicitta that you have in your mind is the same bodhicitta that has been generated in the continuum of the Buddha Shakyamuni, who's your guru. So whatever his realization of, they're yours too. Then you have to imagine countless replicas of Guru Shakyamuni Buddha emanating towards you and all sentient beings and entering into oneself. And now you transform into Shakyamuni Buddha and become one nature with him. And so this is a profound practice passed on by Maitreya Buddha and Lama Tsongkhapa and through a wide lineage of lamas. So this was, I'm the same as Buddha now. Next thing we come up to, rejoicing. So this is quite interesting, right? So you know how when we often look at, we think of, we look at, so what are people worth? So if we ask that, what are we often looking for? We're often looking for what they've already accomplished, aren't they? We think, oh, you're great because you've accomplished all this and that. That's what they're worth. That's their worth, what they've accomplished. But here, the accomplishment is in the purpose. It's not the accomplishment, it's purpose that's more important. It's like you're saying, so in this life, suppose we have our own house, we've got a good livelihood, we've got all these great things going on for us. So we seem to have accomplished a lot. But it's nothing compared to you taking up this vow. So this is worth rejoicing about. You become really something special. Cars and jobs, all these sort of things. It's useful, but they're not as useful as this vow, this pledge that you have in your mind. So your worth is your purpose. Again, you think about whenever we go to a Dharma practice, we're going to start off with our motivation. That's the purpose. That's the worth we bring. That's the worth we are and will become. This is a precept of wishing bodhicitta. So you know that when you take, there are precepts for wishing bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. And this is one of them, to rejoice that you've actually done this. And of course, this is the protective mindfulness of the mind of enlightenment. Now, verse 6. So the idea behind this verse is to make us more mindful of our daily habits. So here, we have to stop making excuses, really, for our unkind behavior or white lies and all these sort of things, right? Because this all works against this vow. So this vow gives us dignity. And the special bodhicitta, it's a precept of a wishing bodhicitta. Now these, so what we're going through is the long version of the succession guru yoga, aren't we? Right now. These six verses are all summed up in the first verse of the shorter version. Yeah, so in the shorter version goes, in my heart I turn to the three jewels of refuge. They are free suffering creatures and place them in bliss. May the compassionate spirit of love grow within me that I might complete the enlightening path. All these six verses are just going, they're in that verse. They're contained in that verse. And all the precepts and all the rest of it. That's that verse. Now between this verse and verse 7, we get to visualize the merit field, we have to dissolve the refuge field. So this is an intermediary step. So it's interesting when you think about this. So what's the purpose of dissolving this refuge field, you might think? You want to keep it there. Well, we can, but we'll show you something else about it. The idea here is to find stability in the nature of awareness itself, not in what you project as an image. Do you understand this? Like what we've got up is a conception, is it? This picture, what we've made it up, the refuge field. Now we dissolve it. What's left is awareness. That's our actual refuge. That's the real refuge, mind itself. As his holiness says, a disciplined mind. So we've used discipline to create the idea that the Buddha is right there in front of us, or we've visualized a refuge field, we've done our preliminaries and so forth. Now we break it apart, we can do it dissolve, and we just rest there. So Ruby said, so everything is about the mind, basically. Yes, it's about the mind. So our true refuge isn't found in a concept or an image, but in the open, aware nature of our own mind. Now you can, a simple way of applying this principle is that during the day, you know, we're inhaling and exhaling all the time, right? So at the end of the exhale, there's a sort of a gap there. If you just like rest in that gap, right? And then you inhale again, right? And you go again. But there's always awareness is always there, isn't it? Wherever we are, awareness is there. So we want to get used to just resting in our awareness. So you can just do it on the breath whenever you breathe. It introduces us to it like a similitude of this all images dissolving. So when the refuge field dissolves, it's sort of sequential, right? So if you put up this big image, then everything's going to come in from the outside in. It's finally going to dissolve into the Buddha. Everything's going to go into him. And what happens after that, there's three possibilities. One, you can meditate the Guru Shakyamuni in the form of brilliant, warm, yellow light. Descends and absorbs into the center of your two eyebrows where the opening of the central channel is. Now, sometimes the dissolving is said to be into the crown of the head. It just depends upon, I guess, the teacher and what text they're using. So as this absorption occurs, feel with conviction that you're receiving all the blessings, qualities, and realizations of the entire enlightened assembly, and it's all purifying your mind stream. But this dissolution is not a mere disappearance. It leads directly into a brief meditation on emptiness. So whenever you get this dissolving thing, it's sort of saying emptiness time now. All the images have gone. It's like, mind is empty of all image, emptiness time. No, that's right. Exactly, Ella. So Ella's saying, yeah, you can't attach to anything. So you see this happening again and again. It's this thing of letting go and coming back to your actual refuge, the nature of the mind. So we rest our mind in this clear, open state, the ultimate nature of reality, which serves as the perfect foundation from which you generate the main visualization of Guru Vajradhara in the next stanza. Now here's the second choice. You can meditate or become familiar with the refuge field, with the refuge object, being Buddha Shakyamuni, just simply dissolving into emptiness. That's another way you can do it. Or Ruby, the refuge field just lifts up higher into space. So when Geshe Tashi Surya was telling us, he was laughing about, you know, what? No problem. Everything empty. Everything is too petty. Just lift it up. It's no problem. So you lift it up, and now the merit field is going to appear, Ruby. And this merit field, as you'll see, is different. It's not Buddha Shakyamuni, it's Vajradhara. Between verse 6 and verse 7, after special bodhicitta, between 6 and 7. So he started off, you know, with taking refuge in the Buddha. Remember? Now it says, in the sky before me, on a breathtaking throne of jewels, blah, blah, blah. This is Guru Vajradhara. If you imagine, the refuge fields lifts up into space. Yeah. In subsequently, when later on you hear that Za Hum Nam Ho at the end of this coming verse, and Vajradhara is absorbing all the wisdom beings, the refuge field has to also be absorbed in. So all the other wisdom beings are invoked with the light rays from the Hum. They assemble in the space above Vajradhara's head, where the refuge field is already, and they're all absorbed together into Vajradhara. So this comes up with here. Za Hum Bam Ho, they merge to become non-dual. Like I said, if you've not dissolved the refuge field into emptiness and you've left it there and put Guru Vajradhara underneath him as the merit field, when you go Za Hum Bam Ho, everything's going to go boom into Vajradhara.
So, when
Ho
come, you can do
the mudra. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Question from Denny. Eddie, when we recite Za Hum Bam Ho, can you demonstrate the mudra?
Oh, I used to know. What was it? Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. One, Za Hum Bam Ho. Thank you. That's right.
Right.
You got the two fingers up like that. That's right. This is big finger, little finger, like that. Is that right? And then bam. Yeah. Za Hum Bam Ho.
And that doesn't
matter what arm. I don't think so. No, it might do, but I'll put the left on the right. I'll try and hold everything is empty, and on top of that is the conventional truth.
So
I have I always do my left, like on the bottom, as a support of everything.
The big finger.
Big finger touches the opposite little finger.
Ah,
okay. Yeah, so you do it, do it. And so you can play around like that. Okay, got them together, cross. Yeah. Now this part, now we actually begin the practice. So everything else was the preliminaries. So verse 7 actually begins the Guru Yoga. And this verse here covers verses 2 and 3. Of the short succession Guru Yoga, where it says, in the sky, the lotus, the sun, the moon, shall I see my lamas, Dorje Chang, blue and color, holy Vajra and bell, blah, blah, blah. Calling forth the awakened from all 10 directions, inviting them to him to melt into one. And so that Za Hum Bam Ho, that means that they all melt into one. Okay, so in terms of visualizing the spirit field, so what I've sort of tried to do here was put up different coloured Buddhas to show you for this, like for this one, I think is Akshobhya, because Akshobhya is blue. So Vajradhara is also blue. So this is not this is just about the pledges. All these Buddhas that look like this, they're the pledges. I got enough different picture for Vajradhara. So this is just a whole Vajra master. Like when you do this, imagine Vajradhara in front of you, and you say what you have said. This is the idea that Vajradhara is your Lama. Just like Buddha Shakyamuni was your, is just a manifestation of the appearance of a guru. Here it's the same thing, now except it's going to be Vajradhara. So the previous refuge field has been dissolved. This new field has been generated. As you know, light rays emanate from the blue Hum at Vajradhara's heart and vital the wisdom beings and so forth. The wisdom beings can appear as like lights, stars, or snowflakes that dissolve into the visualized Vajradhara. So they become like non-dual. So then sometimes you read the text, it's like they call it like a rain of nectar. They call it, this is the blessings. But so you get lots of I mean, these tantric practices have huge symbolic meaning. So like you say, if you read it as a rainfall of snowflakes, it's like you have to understand that these aren't just snowflakes. just a way of using language. So when vocalizing the Za, so you go like, Za, Hum, Bam, Ho. So when you say Za, all these, the deities and everything, assemble in the space above Vajradhara's crown. With Hum, they enter into Vajradhara's body. So you'd be going, Zaad are above me. Do have assembled in the space above. Hum, they enter the body, and bam, when you're like bam, bam, they become indivisibly one with Guru Vajradhara, and Ho stables the unity. Za, hum, sorry, bam, you put the bam, they're indivisibly one, like that's your one thing. And it's ho, ho, it's stable. Everything is stable now. It's not going to change. Gelug Rinpoche says, enlightened beings are pervasive, so the invitation is merely a mental aid for the student. Like they've always been there, so we invite them, but they're already there. It's just a little play. And now we come to these prostrations to the Guru. I bow to the lotus feet of my jewel-like Guru Vajradhara. So in here, so you prostrate to the Guru, you make this pledge to Varachana. It's also a pledge within 50 verses of Guru devotion. But in that, there's two lines. I bow at your lotus feet, I'm my jewel-like Guru Vajradhara. Now, in the short version of the six-session Guru Yoga, it says, like this, to your blue lotus feet, I prostrate Dorje Chang. Yeah? Straight after that, if you're doing the shorter version, you start to do now these eight lines of praise. So in the long version, as you can see, it just follows across. You prostrate to the Guru, then you do the praises. If you're doing the shorter version, you do the praises now.
Praises are
in. No, they're not.
So you're supposed to
skip
across?
That's right. You'll need to get your long one, or have the long version right there, or else you've memorized it. So if you've memorized the long one, you just go, okay, great, now it's back into the shorter one. Praises to Haruka, Sakasambhava, and also to Vajrayogini as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're saying there's eight different deities.
Do you know it, so which line corresponds to which deity?
No, I don't. I often thought it was just like there are eight verses, particularly to the mother side, and then eight verses to the father side.
Uh-huh.
So eight verses to Vajrayogini or Vajrabarahi, and then eight towards Ruka Chakra Sambhara, the male badge.
Yeah, okay, I see.
And question from Francisca. When we do Guru Puja and we do eight-line praise, we use bell at Hum Hum Fe. Do we use bell when doing this on our own or only in the puja?
I think... No, you use the bell here. It's one, two, three. Just like this, hum, hum, pay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And Rosemary asks, so do we recite the eight verses in every recitation of the short version or just one in three?
No, just the one in the three.
Jimmy, because we are using bell and Dorje, do we need to make some sort of physical tantric offering, i.e. cups? Because we're using bell and Dorje, do we need to make some sort of physical tantric offering?
If you want to.
But Eddie, if I'm out and about, like away for the weekend, and I don't take my bell and Dorje, is that all right?
No, also then, one of the little things you have is a little card with your bell and Dorje on it and a whole lot of those tantric instruments, or you've got it on your phone. You need to have these with you all the time.
Sorry, back to Denny's question. Yeah. For example, I have set up cups with tantric offerings, not just water only.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's so fine. There's no problem there.
And it's okay to offer chocolate, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
And then you know,
the deities love chocolate, Deb. Of course they do. So again, this is the pledge of the mother tantras, and at each of Fran, at the end of each line, ring the bell three times, once for each syllable, and this signifies the three kayas. The home, home play. They're our friends. They're the family, Ella. Yeah, so this, now tricky stuff happens here too in the visualization. So if you have a mother tantra initiation, which you probably all have because we just went up to CI recently, so we all have one, so we have to do this. If you did not have a mother tantra initiation, you do not have to do this. But we all have one, so we're in. So then the Vajradhara that was there with his consort, now transforms into Lama Haruka, so it's blue, with the consort Vajrayogini, who's red, surrounded by fierce flames. So the praise focuses on Haruka's qualities. So then emanate a Dakini from your heart, who, while prostrated before Chakrasambhara, holds his right foot in her hands as she recites the lines of praise. So I've also heard that some of you should imagine yourself or the stakini, like bowing each time for each praise. So it'd be like, hum, hum, pay, hum, hum, pay, and just think, okay, the dakini bows. Next line, hum, hum, pay, prostrate. Or raise the foot and just touch the head. But when you finish reciting all 16 lines of praise, visualize that Chakrasambhara and Vajrayogini turn back into Vajradhara with his consort, and then you withdraw the Dakini you emanated, dissolving her into the seed syllable in your own heart. Now, Vajrayogini's red color specifically symbolizes our tumo or inner fire and the bliss. Yeah, so what I just said, I got this from either Lava Zopa's one, or perhaps it was Succession Guru Yoga by Ishithachan. Yes, so for those of you who are online who have not, we don't have access to the handouts I've passed out, there is a handout that I've put out where you can find out more about each of the visualizations and the meaning and each text. So I'll put up the page number and the source. You can easily go there and find out more about it.
I generally do shorter one from memory and long version time permitting.
Yeah.
Plus, I can't recall having been instructed to do it.
No, you don't have to be instructed to do it. So this is advice from Nama Yishi, how to implement these two different practices, bringing the long one into the short one. Thank you. And it's the same sort of thing as you'll see again when we do the short one. There's another section there where you bring in all the bodhisattva vows and tantric vows and so forth. Again, it's just a way of sort of expanding it. So, Fran, I don't think there's any fault in not doing it, not saying those praises and so forth, but I couldn't be sure.
And Demi asks, for those who only have Father Tantra, for example, the recent Haruka Vajrasattva initiation, is there any harm if we also recite Mother Tantra?
No harm.
Also, that's Mother Tantra.
And Father.
I know what you said, but it's Mother Tantra. Haruka Vajrasattva is Mother Tantra.
If they were at the recent Vajrasattva, Mother Tantra.
Okay. So the recent Vajrasattva from Deshisoka was Mother. Yes, because Mithi's been saying because it's on the east left hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Vajrasattva. And so at CI, was it Mother or Father?
It was
everything.
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
Mother. Yeah. There's
Mother
Central. Okay. So here we have the offerings. So here we're sort of looking at these different forms of offerings. And how this is done, this is the priest in the city. You make the four types of offering. So from your heart, you have to offer these offering goddesses are emanated. And they make these offerings like outer offerings, outer or material offerings like flowers and incense. The inner offerings are the purified five meats and five nectars. there's also a secret offering, which is the bliss void wisdom, and then suchness offering, which is to do with, again, the offering of bliss between the consort and between the two visualized deities. So, you know, so when you're making the offerings, you can't do this in the ordinary aspect, but you have to. So you have to generate yourself as a deity first. This is so that you bless and emanate the offerings. Then whichever one is suitable for you at this time. In fact, I think this is more at this instance. I think you're more like a Shakti. No, you've done Shakyamuni. You are Shakyamuni. I think it's any deity that you want to do. So this corresponds to verse 4. So remember in verse 4 in the short session, so we've done the 8 praises. Right? You've got your blue lotus feet, our prostrate Lord Dead Chang, you've recited the 8 verses, you've put those 8 praises. Then you say, with oceans of clouds, I make triple offerings, the lands, jewel vials, the sun and the moon, and all precious offerings I make unto you. That's what it says in verse 4 in the short. And this is what it's getting at. It relates to verse 10 in this in here. And, of course, the mandala offering, which is like this verse 5. Up to verse 4, sorry. And this is all up to verse. So A11 here in the long one corresponds to verse 4 in the shorter one. The precept is you have to make offerings, you have to offer the guru a mandala six times a day. So then we have verses 12, 13, and 14. And there are no visualizations in these. This sort of, it just basically either stays the same. You are before Vajradhara and you're reciting this material. Okay, so Ruby's asking, what are the offerings of Samantabhadra? So what they are is... So clouds just means lots of them.
Yeah.
So the word cloud just means like a heap, right? But also the cloud has this idea of being not solid. We're not holding on. It's like a cloud, you just go right through. It's like empty, right? They're empty. They're not solid and substantial. This is all in the nature of emptiness, this whole thing. So you can easily go on. So Samantabhadra was renowned for his way of making offerings. And so, yeah, so you have this thing called the wish-granting tree. Have you heard of that? That's the Samantabhadra offering. These sort of quite strange things you read the offerings of Samantabhadra. Okay, we've got to go to verse 13, 14. Requests, precept taught in 50 verses. And Lama Zopa says, here's the time you've got to think. No matter how many gurus I have, they are all fully enlightened. They're Buddha. And now I think we're going to come up very shortly. A couple of minutes ago. Turning the thought. So all of these last three verses are really talking about how to relate to the Lama, to the Guru. And probably the best or the easiest access you can have about this material is in the Lam Rim. Right? Because in there they talk about how to devote yourself to the Guru. Or else you get any of those major books by Lama Zopa Trisho about Guru devotion, it covers all this in there. Okay, so now we're going to come to some interesting stuff, the field of merit. So these two lines, requested in this way, my Supreme Guru comes to the crown of my head. This ties up with verse 6 in the shorter version. And this verse 6 is broken up into two sections, A and B. And so this is the section 6A. It's the first part. But here we have this field, the field of merit. So this is what happened yesterday. Now, remember Vajradhara was in front of us? Now he moves. Now he comes up to the crown. Now he's going to sit above your head. So this movement from in front to on top marks a sort of critical shift in this relationship we're having with the guru. So most of us have our relationship with the guru has always been with an external person, isn't it? We think this is what most of us think the guru is the person. So the person is like out there. And so what we're doing in a sense is that we take it from what we need to do out there and bring it up here, we're going to bring it in. Right? So we're not, again, it's just coming back to the mind, isn't it? We're going to have to rely upon ourselves here. But we're no different in mind and so forth than these enlightened beings. So the path is progressing from this dualistic supplication to a non-dual embodiment of wisdom. And this is why they've come up to sit up, because they're going to come in. And then it's non-dual. Before it's dualistic. Me here, Guru there. So Vajradhara in concert, of course. And now come to the second bit. This is the second part of verse 6 in the short version. And this is where the emptiness meditation is going to take part. How do you move? Well, a moon.
Moon mandala.
Yeah?
The sun disc mandala.
Moon mandala is a round circle, that's like the moon that you see in the sky.
You mentioned mandala?
Yeah?
So where does mandala come in? Moon, yes. Moon,
yeah, but you don't, you don't just say moon, do you?
Oh.
Because it's not a moon. What is it? Tell me, somebody. What's this white moon just symbolizing? It's a symbol. It's either, most of it's bodhicitta. The sun is for the wisdom. There's wisdom. So this is great. You know, other things like, here's the wisdom of emptiness. That's the ultimate reality. Now on top of conventional reality, well, they're not separate, but now the mind of enlightenment. But the mind of enlightenment is empty. Out of this has arisen the guru, who's the embodiment of bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness. So why is it called a mandala? Because this is the support for the supported. The supported is the whoever's sitting on top of that moon disk. So you might have come across this term, the support and the supported. The support is like this world is our support. What's it support? Me. I am supported by the world. You want to become an enlightened being? What are you going to be supported by? Wisdom realizing emptiness and the mind of enlightenment. Here, however, this moon seat, these two moon seat and sun seat are not always seen to be bodhicitta like this. It could be quite something else, especially in the tantric image, which we'll come to. I'll explain. Okay, so now, so this in terms of the vows, the tantric root vow, so you have to recollect emptiness 6 times a day, right? So this covers that vow. So here's the visualization. And this can be seen in Lama Zopa Rinpoche's book on pages 50 to 62. There's a massive amount there in emptiness and how to meditate on the eye and all these sort of things. But in this, the Geshe Tekchok book, pages 25 to 28, this is really something else in there. It's quite special. So I'll just basically tell you what's going on. So Vajradhara comes to the crown of one's head. So here's interesting. He, often we see that he dissolves in dust, but not always. In this commentary, a duplicate, he stays there and a duplicate of Vajradhara is absorbed by us. Okay. Duplicate melts into light and dissolves through the central channel of ourselves down to the heart chakra. Here, within the opened red and white seeds, a white hum syllable with a reddish tinge radiates 5 types of light. And Vajradhara merges into this hum, becoming one taste with one's mind. This process simulates the stage of death And as the guru's mind merges inseparably with your own, you meditate on emptiness. This is known as taking death onto the path as the Dhammakaya. Now, in your handouts that I've given you, there's a whole meditation on this there for you to do. It's really easy. And this is the one that Rodrina Kirby shared with us, that Lama Rishi had passed down to her. And so when you look at this, like I said, it's really straightforward. It's not a difficult thing to do.
Is that the space-like emptiness?
That's right, space-like emptiness, that's right. So now we're taking death onto the path as the Dhammakaya. So we rest our mind in this state of one taste, which is the non-dual union of your awareness with the Guru's blissful wisdom mind. So this is a meditation on emptiness, and it's the ultimate nature of reality. And it serves as the essential foundation from which you will arise as the deity in the next stanza. So you've got emptiness, and we know what's going to happen after. But it says, and now you arise as Bodhisattva. That's what follows on, right? But you've got to have the emptiness part first. So that hum syllable, with a reddish tinge and radiating light, symbolizes the great bliss. The one taste signifies the inseparability of the perceiver and the perceived within the nature of emptiness. Then you appear as the deity. Right? So out of the emptiness, you appear as the deity. And this is covered in the short, in the sixth, in verse six of the short succession of Guru Yoga, which is one. And I, Dorje Semper, unite with Chomden, the holding Dorje and Dal, experiencing great bliss. So it's in the short version, and this is what's covered here. So from a state of space-like openness or emptiness, we as the practitioner, the person practicing, we instantly arise as a light. Now, this is interesting. Vajradhara, father, mother, but appearing as Vajrasattva with concept Bhagavati. And so this is one of the things that I'm... which Jhana Rinpoche mentioned, right? We undertook the retreat. So this, I think, shocked a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
All of us was like, what, what? And you know, so I've been doing research into this and looking at what's the difference between Vajrasattva and Vajradhara, a white Vajradhara. So anyway, well, state of space like openness or emptiness, we instantly arise as a white Vajradhara, a father, mother, like this. But appearing as Vajrasattva. So the deity holds the Vajra and bell, and as you can see, it really should be like the Vajradhara. This is not quite right, this one here. When he holds the consort, it's like this. It's not the normal Vajrasattva with a... Dorje here in the bell at the hip, right?
The
Vajradhara. Yeah, that's right. Vajradhara holds them like this, and that's how they should appear. When you appear, you're like that. Yeah. So this is the Vajradhara. Okay, I'll tell you why shortly, Ella. Yeah, that's right. This is the question. I like why. Oh, gee. So I can write it down. I can remember. So this is to symbolize, so this is when you do this, it's now, we're talking about now completion stage, highest yoga. Before it was generation stage. Now we're moving into a deeper thing. So this explanation is from a completion stage point of view, and it represents the pure, pure illusory body. So that's why it's white, and this is why it's the cross, and this is why it's called as Vajradhara. Because we're not, this is not a purification thing here. It looks like it is, but obviously this, the picture, you shouldn't pay attention to it. As you find them, as in the descriptions, Vajradhara has, holds his consort. He's got his hands behind him. He's like this. Not like Bell here and Dorje there. We're not, it's not really about the purification using Vajrasattva here. Yeah?
Kerry says she thought it was white during initiation, but arises blue, not changing to white.
Now, remember he can't, he starts off white. He starts off blue. Remember Vajradhara was blue at the beginning? Now it reappears as Vajrasattva, right? And it's white. But that appearing Vajrasattva as white is actually white Vajradhara. Oh, white Vajradhara, sorry. And you pointed at me, not you, sorry. So as you know, Vajradhara and Vajrasattva are the strong relationship between them, isn't there? There's a Vajra, but Vajradhara is like the cosmic Buddha, and Vajrasattva, meaning cosmic Buddha, meaning Dharmakaya. Vajradhara is the Dharmakaya. Vajrasattva is the Sambhogakaya. So Vajrasattva emerges from the Dharmakaya. So you have differences in what they look like, right? And you also have differences in what their function is. So one being Dharmakaya, one being Sambhogakaya. I'm sorry, Ruby? Vajrasattva is Sambhogakaya, yes. And Vajradhara is Dharmakaya.
So Vajrasattva is more difficult for anyone to see the person.
I'm sorry?
If it's a Sambhogakaya,
yeah.
It would be harder for people to. Nobody can see.
Ordinary people can't see him, no, that's right. So Vajrasattva is a Sambhogakaya, is only on the levels of ninth, tenth bhumis. That's right. So it is primarily there for the bodhisattvas who have these high realizations. Now, of course, you can also arise as Gaura Samaja, Haruka, or Yamantaka. Any deity you can arise as here. But doing this fulfills these four pages of Akshobhya. So when we see when he appears as Vajrasattva, right, we really should identify him as a resultant stage Vajradhara rather than the purification deity. He's not fulfilling the functions of purification here. This is not what the Vajrasattva is about here. Yes, I mean, this is what I just found out like 2 weeks ago, right? And I had a look at it and go, oh my gosh, all my pictures have got Vajrasattva, and you think it's the purification, and you go, no, it's not. It's really completion stage practice here. Okay, so now we practice our generosity. And this ties into the first two lines in the shorter succession Guru Yoga. Land, body, and wealth, and all virtues collected for the sake of all mothers, I gladly release. And here these fulfill the two pledges of Ratna Sambhava, giving material things and giving Dharma.
I have the impression that giving material things actually means giving material things.
Yeah.
Like rather than mentally.
Yep, that's right.
So giving material things like, you know,
blankets, money, food, yeah. Yeah, anything like that, medicine. Yeah.
But you can also do it mentally.
Yeah, that's right.
Ah, okay.
You do it mentally, and you also do it physically.
Uh-huh.
Like when we're out in the world, right? We've generated as a deity. We're still out here in the world as a deity, but we're offering money to the poor, clothing, medicines, whatever we can. Yeah, we should still do that.
Food to the pet.
Yeah.
That's
right. Food to the pet. That's right. Okay, so now we come up to the bodhisattva vows. And here's some material that I found to help it to explain these vows. Right? So as you know, we're going through a whole lot of vows here, bodhisattva vows, mother tantra vows, tantra vowels in general, all sorts of vowels that are going to be doing shortly. There's a good explanation in Six Issues Guru Yoga by Geshe Sachin, but this book, Tantric Ethics, is also very good. What's particularly good is Tsongkhapa's commentary. So I'm always looking for, like, if you can find material by the real deal, the right guy, that's the place you want to go.
Is there a copy of that here?
Yes, it is. Yeah, right. In fact, I think it's still in the library, Ella. Yeah. And if you have this other book I've got here called Ocean of Indivisible Method and Wisdom, which is a commentary on Yamantaka. Now, if you don't have the commentary on Yamantaka, you can still take this and open it up and look at the explanation of the vows. Because the vows go right across. It doesn't matter whether you're doing Yamantaka, Vajrayogini, whatever the highest yoga tantra thing is, other than Kala Chakra, it's got a really good explanation in there. Because the solitary hero one is the one of Lama Tsongkhapa's major deity. And we're in the lineage of Lama Tsongkhapa, right? So there's a number of different Vajrabharava practices you can do. But his one was solitary hero. Sorry for you guys online. Ruby's asking questions about the Yamantaka, the Vajrabharava, the 13th deity Vajrabharava initiation, and how it's related to solitary hero Vajrabharava. And so now you're asking Ruby, what do you mean there's no mention of practice?
That's right.
But that was the case with all of them. All those initiations. We were not instructed you have to do the sadhana in practice. We were given succession guru yoga. That's what we meant to be doing.
All implement into the sixth
session. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, here's some very useful material you can get on the vows. These bodhisattva vows. So when we go to the short version, we say, land, body, and wealth, all virtues collected, the sake of all loves, I gladly release, and I vow to protect all the vows I have taken, nor transgress even one for the sake of my life. Now, this is when you open up your long succession guru yoga and go through the vows. You'd recite them all there. So you've got all that there for you, Alan, because I remembered you saying, I thought, okay, I'll get you something. just to make it easier for you. Yeah, so for those of you who are here, you've got that little handout, right, to show you how you can integrate the short succession of Guru Yoga with the longer one so that everything is complete. Of course, you don't have to do that, but this is a way of doing it. Otherwise, if you keep just reciting the shorter one, and then somebody says, so what are the 18 root bodhisattva downfalls? You've got to go, I don't know. Yeah, so how do you know what the vows are then?
Yeah.
Now, that's the major thing here is to hold the vows. If you don't know what they are, you can't hold them. So, yeah. It becomes briefer by using the shorter one, but you still want to put these vowels in so you get used to knowing what they are. Ruby?
The second last one. The king are just fools of
horses. Yeah. Okay, you'll see that said differently in the thing, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And there you can see I've jumped right ahead, right? Again, this is in the verse 7, the short one. You know, you've got to keep saying all this. Then you move over to verse 12. Now this comes up in verse 8 in the short one. And in terms of what we're doing here, in verse 8, you protect the pledges to Amitabha and the two of the six to Varachana. So now we come to this little bit that I've put into it. So I thought about this. I thought, you know, the big problem for us is that what'll happen is you don't do it. That's what happens. over time, sometimes you're under so much pressure or you're busy and you just don't do it. So this happens to a lot of people. And this, so you, those people who are here, you do have this handout repairing the non-engagement. Yeah, there it is. This is the one. Yeah, good. Yeah, you do have it, right? So everybody's got the two-page handout. What if I miss succession guru yoga? That's what it's, this is what we're saying. Repairing the non-engagement means, what if I miss succession guru yoga? So you all have a handout that looks a bit like this. Right? So I'll put this in there because if you do miss it, right? There's things you can do about it. Now, there are different ways you can. This is a simple way I'll put it for. Suppose you had, like, well, this evening, right? You're going to go home, probably all do your six issues and go yoga. But suppose for whatever reason, you forget or it isn't done. Then it's, oh, now what do I do? So this handout is to deal with that. So what you can do is first use the four opponent powers and just restart the practice. And like I said, perform the missed sessions if possible. So if you miss today and you wake up tomorrow and want to go, oh my gosh. You just do two. Do another one. Now this is quite different, of course, if you haven't been doing it for 6 months or something, right? And you go, you're not going to be able to do heaps of those. So this also, if possible. And in that handout that you've got, you can see, I'll put down to, like if you haven't done it for, say, a year or so, or 2 years, this does happen. People just stop practicing, and then they take it back up again for whatever reason. So there's ways of dealing with this, so if it's prolonged neglect, meaning weeks, months, or years, there's a way of dealing with it. If you miss several days at a time, there's a way to deal with it. If you miss it for 24 hours, there's a way of dealing with it. So don't be too distressed. It is a problem, but it can be remedied. Bodhisattva practice is highly recommended here. So as you know, we've just had Bodhisattva permission given to us by Bishan Sopa. What did he say? Just one. All you had to do was say it once. Of course, they recommended saying it 28 times or 100. And if you haven't done it for a year or months, maybe 100,000 is the time to do now, right? Or a heap of them. And here's another really sweet way of doing it. Go along to the soul offerings. This was said again and again in the advice that you have there. Go along to the next time we offer soul. And that brings us to the end of our presentation. I know, I thought it was going to take ages. I was sort of quite worried, thinking, geez, how am I going to do this? But like with Riffy's help, it was very good because, you know, he's got these handouts now. So you can, this one here, of course, gives you all the books and the commentaries and the page numbers to find information about any of those verses. You have this way of responding when you don't do the practice. And of course, Sarah, you know, if you're concerned about any part of the practice, don't, like, Geshe Zofa will be coming back. We have people who are much more skilled and knowledgeable than I. When they come, ask them. And if you're sort of looking like this and going, I'm going to ask a question about succession guru yoga, and that's got to do with Highest Yoga Tantra, then look around and go, there's a lot of people here, I don't know whether they've taken these initiations. Now's not the time. Remember Geshe Sultan was, you asked, hey, Ian. Ian asked the question about succession guru yoga, and Geshe Sultan, no, not answering. This is not appropriate because a lot of the people here don't have the initiation. So if you see that, then don't do it in public, but go up and say, could I have a few words afterwards? I have a question about H Y High Shaka Tantra or Six Session Guru Yoga, and I understand it's this sort of super thing.
Sorry, a question I missed before. In the talking about blue Vajradhara, white Vajrasattva. So do we arise as white or blue Vajrasattva or Vajradhara? What do we arise as?
Well, if you're doing it as the white Vajrasattva, understand that you're actually this more white Vajradhara. But you're appearing as white Vajrasattva. And when you appear in union, you've got to have your hands crossed, not like the normal thing. You've got to rise as the deity in union, so it should be like that. But again, you do not have to arise as white Vajradhara Vajrasattva. My friends, here's where we normally arise as Vajrabharava. Somebody doing a Vajrayogini practice or Vajrayogini or Tara. It really doesn't matter. You do the one, especially like if you have a Siddhama commitment, that's why I would arise there as the Avantaka, and then you can do all these other practices and then you continue on. So we've got a few resources. And His Holiness has said, if you just read it through, that's enough. You've fulfilled your commitment. Yeah. Now, so even just reading it is, you've done it. When you do all the visualizations and that, but if you have time, do it. It becomes much more powerful, much more meaningful, all these things. And you get, if you just read it, it won't take you long, I'm sure, before you start wondering, what's this mean? What's that mean? Or like Alice says, why? You need to ask those questions. Find the answer gives you more conviction in it. So I see we've come to the end. I hope this has been useful to you. I know I've been stumbling quite a bit. I was quite uncertain in myself about putting this across. What did you say? Just do your best. So there it is. And like I said, there are other people much more knowledgeable than me. So please, when you come across them, ask them. What I mean by knowledgeable people, I'm really referring to geshis, like ordained masters who've been doing this practice for a long time. They will, they can give you, they know much more than I do. Because when we watched Dada Rinpoche, I found it really impressive that he could quote this text and that text and then quote from it. I go, oh my God, this guy, wow. So he did this when he was talking, he did a little bit about succession during yoga there, didn't he? And that's when he brought up this idea of the white Vajradhara. I was going, wow, and then you go, completion stage practice, I had no idea. So, I've had this about 20 years. So it's new to me. So it might be the same for you. I just want to say, so thank you for attending. I really do hope it was worthwhile. I've done my job, so to speak. So let's dedicate it to the long life of Dada Rinpoche, who gave us this initiation, the long life of any other teacher that you have. Let's wish they all have great long lives, that all their wishes come true, and that we become enlightened as soon as possible.